Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality.
So hello, everybody. Welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we are going to sort of continue our topic on trends in technology. We were just saying how much fun it was last week to talk about sort of how movies tie into all this and how The Gods Must Be Crazy is a funny film, and I definitely need to watch it again. Sort of towards the end of our conversation, we were sort of talking about how one of the things that I find interesting in trends in technology is sort of how work is changing. So especially with everybody working from home over the last year and a half or so, and just sort of how the work from anywhere culture is sort of, I won't say that it's taking over everywhere, but I think it's definitely more prevalent. I mean, technology moves fast, but when I think of, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, when we wanted to get onto a server, like a lot of times that meant driving into the office and like getting on an actual server, like actually laying hands on something. And that's gotten a lot better over the last 2 decades. And now, you know, for a while it was, oh, well, you VPN and do everything on the VPN. And one of these trends that I keep seeing is that, well, maybe you're not even going to need a VPN. Maybe it's just going to be, you're going to work from wherever you're going to work, because where are you going to VPN to, right? Like, does it really matter that you have a home base somewhere when you have all this cloud stuff?
Right. Exactly. And more importantly, you know, like, what does VPN get the individual user versus what does it get for the corporation? So like in a corporation, you can wrap all your security around connectivity to your site or your organization. But what does that mean to the home user? What does it mean to a person? Do I need VPN? How much protection does that get me? So in other words, if I don't use Wi-Fi, you know, I have a secure password, I have a password manager, what am I gaining or not gaining?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people, and I can see sort of the pros and the cons to this, like some people think that VPNs are actually like bad because you're getting a false sense of security, right? Like, just because I can sign into this VPN, does that mean I should be able to get into everything the VPN is on? Like, maybe not though. Maybe it shouldn't matter that you were able to authenticate against this one thing to get connected to everything else.
Right. And the other thing is like, you know, as we stack these things together, right? So you've got your home router and all that stuff, maybe you have a mesh, or, you know, you've got all these things stacked. The more things you layer on top of things for consumers, the more challenging you make solving the problem. So I think I sent this to you. I wrote a proposal that I'm hoping that the city of Durham and other cities and states and places will take up. And that is, you know, community-wide IT support. Like we talked about this before, we all have access to IT people who can help us figure out our problems and work with us through these issues. But what about those people who do not? And so now that you've added VPN, you've got your internet provider, you've got all these pieces. And so now your users called you and said, I'm having a problem. You know, how do you detangle all of that or put that in a language that is simple enough for the average consumer to understand and to manage?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's sort of, I mean, it's almost like two big problems altogether. Like tech problems are really hard and communication is really hard. And lots of times people that are really good at tech problems are not good at communicating and vice versa. But for something like this to work, you really need people that are good at both.
Right. That's exactly correct. And so, I mean, I think that as we think about these things going forward, you know, we've got a lot to think about. But in reality, how do we simplify it? How do we simplify what we do? So we used to have this professor in the law school who used to say, can you speak English? And I swear I thought I was, but apparently he didn't think I was speaking English because I was saying things to him he didn't understand, you know. And so, you know, we have this standard list checklist that we go through to see what the problem is. But then you get into the weeds, right? You know, asking someone about, you know, something such as simple as TCP/IP, you know, that's a whole nother language to somebody, you know? And so I was telling somebody, you know, we are migrating from TCP/IP 4 to 6. What, you know, what does that get me? Or, or even the more common ones like 5G, you know, like people don't know what the G stands for. What does the 5G, they just know they want it because somebody said it's faster.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how do we make it plain English so people understand what these things are we're talking about, and how do they navigate it in their homes and in their work and in the things that they do when they don't have an IT staff or they don't have resources to help them, you know, kind of set all this up?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's a really good point about 5G. Like, how did we even get those names like 3G, 4G and 5G? Like, I feel like I'm a fairly technical person and I don't really know what they mean. I know 4 is bigger than 3 and 5 is bigger than 4. So like, so I assume that that means, you know, better, but at the same time, I don't know like the true details beyond all that.
Yeah. And I mean, like, so there's a, you know, you do know there's an internet regulatory group that manages all of this stuff, right? That, like, you know, 4G and 5G, you know, and all those things. And so the G has been specific, has been consistent across. So we start out at 3G. Remember, you probably never heard of 2G or 1G. They didn't start there. They started out at 3G. But then they added these other things like LTE. Every once in a while, you can go to your site and you'll be on LTE. And it's like, what does that mean? Does that mean somebody misspelled let? You know, what is happening here? And so I think that our part of the problem is that we are too comfortable with acronyms and shortcuts. And so we assume that everybody's going to catch up with us. And that's not the case, you know. And so I think that in a lot of ways, we as technologists, and I'm speaking for broadly now, like technology companies, all of us, we are often thinking of the big picture, and rarely are we thinking about the little user. So we gave you a smartphone. What else do you want from us? You know, why do you need to know how it works or what these different things are?
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
we've given you the phone and you can use it now. So what is that? What do you need for?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just really an interesting time for us to think about these things and what these things mean. And I was trying to see if I could find the company that regulates the cell world. There's a group that does internet. So like the www and the IP addresses and all that. And so they've got so many different groups that do some of these things that, you know, they kind of put it out there and they assume that we know.
Yeah. Is that the IEEE group or IEEE?
IEEE, and I think they are the internet number. So like 1.1.1, and then there are a bunch of others. And I'm not exactly sure where all that lives and who does all that. I know that there is an IETF and I don't know what that means.
Either. It's more acronyms.
More acronyms, but I internet something, frontier, something other, and they are supposed to be big brother for the internet, like keeping us honest on the internet. So I can't remember all that, but I do know the F stands for frontier, and I know the I stands for internet. What the other two is, I don't know. But the people who come up with these different things, you know, I think that they're thinking in that box that they've been, I'm doing this all this time. I know what this means. And I don't know how that rolls itself out into, you know, everybody else, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how it turns out that somebody says, so somebody says 5G and we all become, oh yeah, that makes sense to me. You know, so, but it's just a lot, to know. And I think that all of that, and, you know, according to this, there was a 1G and a 2G. So now you ought to be able to guess what G stands for.
Is it generation?
It's generation. Okay. Yes. That's exactly what it means.
So it is pretty like broad, I guess. First generation, second generation, third generation.
Yeah. I think if I remember GPP, I think I remember GPP. Again, I'm pretty old, so these are kind of going back. But GPP, what were they called? Generation Partnership, something other. I don't know what the other P stands for, but they were the first people to kind of get out in front of cell stuff, you know, kind of controlling how the cell and the technology works. But there are a lot of these things, and again, a lot of acronyms. So you've got some homework to do. We got to go find out who 3GPP means.
Yes.
And, yes. So they are the internet people. And then internet, IETF is Internet Engineering Task Force. That's what it stands for. And these are the people who are supposed to make us behave correctly on the internet. So in other words, the United States doesn't get more than Israel or somebody else. Everybody gets a fair share and all that stuff. And then there is the people who keep up with the internet, the IP addresses, you know, and we tell people all the time what an internet IP address is. It's the same as your house address. It's just for your computer. It's to have a place to deliver the mail. You know, the internet is the U.S. postal system, and that internet address you have on your computer is how the mail gets there, whatever the mail may be.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The it's all this sort of reminds me of I used to do theater with a guy in Wilmington who did. He was a professor of communications at UNCW. And he always talked about, like, the best way to communicate is just communicate at the level of your audience. Like, don't try and be smarter. Don't try and be dumber. Like, communicate in a way that they can understand you. It's like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
The problem is we don't do that.
Yeah.
We do not do that. I mean, if you turn on your TV right now, there's a Verizon commercial somewhere on one of those channels telling you that you can get a new phone free for going to 5G. There's nothing in that commercial that tells you what any of that means. And the only thing I would have guessed that most people get out of that is they can get a new phone because they probably dropped it or cracked it. That's not good, because that's how we sell people things, that we sell people, like, you know, medicines, you know, the medicines that they sell on the TV. You need Skyrizi to help your skin be clear.
Yeah.
Why? You know, like, and you're constantly being bombarded by this kind of information over and over and over again. And the question is, when do you get to the other side of it?
Yeah. When we, so we don't have cable here anymore. So we mainly, like, miss commercials. Like, we don't have most commercials at home, which I love. And then when we went on vacation, I guess about a month or so ago, when we would watch TV at the rental house, like, there's commercials everywhere. And, like, it seemed like almost all the commercials were for these, like, medicines for things that, like, I had no idea what they even were. And they sort of, like,
had all these problems.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. It's like, oh, you need this for blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, Lord, like, do I need that? Like, sometimes I don't feel well, and I don't know, like, maybe this thing will, like, make me feel all better. Like, but it's crazy. Like, all these medicines for things that, and I'm sure, like, there are legitimate uses for some of these medicines, but having them be, like, you know, the majority of advertisements on TV seems weird.
And that's one of those places where I think technology really needs to do something, right? So you remember back in the day, they had the Nielsen ratings, which could tell how many people watched the channel. So technology aging out, I guess, if you will. But commercials ought to be such, like, first of all, most of them are not believable, right? So my hair is falling out. So if I take some of this, my hair will grow back. Yeah, that's not how it works. You know, but I guess maybe I'll grow some hair on my nose or on my arm or my legs, but I'll get some hair somewhere, but not where I really want it to be, right? So, but they don't tell you any of that.
Right.
Or they tell you, you know, buy this great new mattress. This mattress is better than that mattress. Really? How do you know who is? So if I'm a small woman and I get a big mattress, maybe I'll swallow it up in it first. You know, there's the commercials and everything. And that's one of the reasons why I think technology needs to catch up with the rest of the world and straighten out these problems that we have. And it's what I asked you before, you know, how do we make technology more human and less commercial and capitalized, right? Because everything is about money. You know, you can't buy a pair of shoes now. I mean, unless you buy some shoes out of Walmart or somewhere, but you can't buy a pair of shoes, sneakers, I'm talking walking shoes, for less than $100.
Yeah.
They're not out there. Why? What is it about the shoe that's the material? You know, I could see that a part of it could be related to COVID and the transportation problem, but why do shoes cost that much? You know, why is everything so much against the humans and for the capitalists and technology, and how do we fix that?
Yeah, that's a great point. Like just this weekend, I got a new phone because was my old one bad? Like, no, it's old one was fine, but
this
you know,
time.
Yeah, it had been 2.5 years or something.
Yes.
And I was like, I guess I get a new one. And it was like, when we got it, this caused me anxiety as well, but like, so they've got all the SIM cards, right? Like you have to have a SIM card in your phone. The SIM card in your phone is what sort of like identifies what carrier you should be on. So my wife and son, they had just gotten new phones like a year ago or something. So they didn't get a new SIM card, but in mine, I got the phone and then there was a separate box with another SIM card. And my wife is like, well, is this for your phone or is it for mine? And I'm like, well, I don't know. And then I open up the box and there are two more SIM cards in the box. And then there's still an actual SIM card in the phone. And I still have the SIM card in my old phone that it says to use like on the website. And I'm just like, well, I don't know, like which of these things to use. And like the last thing I want, like, is to screw up my cell phone. You know what I mean? Like I've got my password manager on there. All of my second factor stuff is on there. And it's just like, I don't know what any of these are. Like all I want is for it to work and not to like break.
And that's why we need you. Young people, and oh, I shouldn't say young people. I hate when people talk about young people because it takes us all to fix this. But we need people to be thinking about these things and think about. So you should have written to Verizon or whoever your carrier is and say, this is very confusing and not very helpful. As a technologist, I understand all this and I can figure this out. But imagine what you're doing to the average consumer.
Yes.
Because literally swapping out your SIM card from your old phone to your new phone gets you right back to ground zero and you don't lose a bit. You don't lose a minute. You know, you're right there at, you know, people say, oh, well, I won't get 4G if 5G if I don't use these. Yeah. You know, the SIM right. card has got nothing to do with that. You know, you don't need that to get that. But, right. but I think that, you know, as we have these chats and these conversations, I cannot stop emphasizing how important it is for us to make technology human. It is not human.
Yeah.
It might serve the purpose of humans. It is not human. It is technology and capitalism have become such good bedfellows that they don't care about the people who are using their services. As long as you buy it and as long as it's going into the places where they want it to go, it's irrelevant whether you get the best out of it or not. You know, I'll tell you, I got a new dishwasher. So about a month ago, my dishwasher stopped washing dishes. And the only way dishes get washed in my house normally is my husband doesn't wash them, the dishwasher washes them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it stopped working. So we go to the store and we look and there are a gazillion dishwashers. All of them got a gazillion amount of technology. I mean, so much technology. I don't even know, is it a dishwasher or is it a computer? you know, and so you get the dishwasher home. The people come and install it. And they said, well, there's a box back there that won't allow me to push it all the way in. Okay. Uh-huh. What does that mean to me? Well, you're going to have to go back to the electrician and have them remove the box and make a wire somewhere. And a part of my brain just completely shut down. It was like, okay, this is absolutely ridiculous. All I wanted to do was replace my non-working dishwasher with one that works.
Yeah.
I have one that works now, but now it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
The people who were supposed to fix it didn't fix it. The people who I bought it from keep referring me back to the people who came in and installed it. And it's that endless loop. And it loops. And at the end of the day, you get to the point where you're so frustrated by it all. It's just like, it's not worth it. And that's the problem we have with technology. Like, you know, you got your smart tablet, your smart phone, your smart whatever it is. What happens when you run into a problem?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially when we're talking about like combining technologies, like that's one thing that I sort of noticed in like every job I've ever been in. If you have two vendors that are doing something similar with technology, it's always the last person's fault or the other person's fault. You know, like it's so we have VMware and Red Hat Linux. Well, there's an issue with the kernel. That must be Red Hat's problem. Or
gotta be Red Hat's problem.
As Red Hat. No, definitely not our problem. Definitely a VMware thing. VMware. Oh, definitely not our thing. Maybe it's something on the actual hardware itself that you didn't buy from us. And it's just like, fingers pointing and pointing and pointing.
So that's been around since the beginning of time. So back in the day, COBOL, Assembler, FPG, and all those other wonderful languages would run applications. So there's an application called CICS. It's the early precursor to how we use ATMs and all that stuff. And IMS, all the IMS was a database manager, but all these different pieces of software. If something would go wrong, and no one took ownership of the problem. And that has not changed in 2020. And to further extrapolate that, you can't contact Microsoft by phone. You can't contact Dell by phone. I'm talking about the consumer now. I'm not talking about a big company, but you can't contact, you know, all of these people have become away from you. And if you do happen to get somebody on the phone, they don't speak English very well. They can do some basic level troubleshooting. And this is all a part of losing the humanity of technology, because we've integrated capitalism so far, so deep in it, that that's all we can do. So Microsoft has 1 billion customers. Google has 1 billion, you know, probably more, you know, all these customers. It's not practical for them to answer a phone call. But the problem is they need to answer a phone call.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. At my previous job, I remember we didn't have a great relationship with Microsoft, but we definitely used them. And something happened to the Active Directory controllers, and the analysts had to call support, and they were like, well, Microsoft won't even talk to us unless we give them a credit card number.
Right.
And it's like, all right. Like, you know, if you're working for a company, I think that's fine. Like, the company could pay for it. I understand that, like, they need to do that. But like, if I'm an end user, I don't want to give my credit card to Microsoft because I don't know how much they're going to charge me. I mean, is it going to be $5 or $10,000? Like, it'll probably be somewhere in between there, probably closer to the $10,000 mark than the $5 mark, which just sort of sucks.
Exactly. But we've got to find a way to get people that are in the right places and doing the right work to think about the humanity of it, you know, and we were talking about this the other time about security, right? So we understand how security is paramount to everything, right? We need to be secure. But even that has become, you know, a problem, you know, because, you know, the more you wrap stuff around, so for example, access your doctor, you know, so they use a tool called Epic or Maestro Care or whatever they call it this week. Mm-hmm. It has this thing called MyChart. And it wants you to set up two-factor authentication. One of my neighbors is probably in his late 90s. And whatever they did to it, he could not get onto MyChart. He called the phone number for his doctor, and it rang and rang and rang and rang and rang. Nobody answered it. And so he kept doing it over and over and over again. And he said, should I go to the hospital? Please don't go there. Don't go there. Let's figure out what it is. And so we were able to get on the phone with the DHTS help desk and turn off two-factor. And it makes perfectly good sense that he has two-factor on his phone. He should, because he's vulnerable, you know. He is on Medicare. He's probably got a lot of benefits and stuff like that. And you know, his identity could be easily stolen. Yeah. But he is not technically savvy enough to do this. And he doesn't have anybody else at home to help him with this. Yeah. So, you know, the neighborhood IT person who's wandering around lost, you know, because she don't have a job anymore, you know, ends up at his house trying to figure out how to fix this. That's unfortunate because it just happened to be a happenstance or luck that I saw him. You know, he was standing outside with his cane. He was looking around like he was lost. And I just said, may I help you? And he said, I can't make an appointment to see my doctor. Now, that's not something you tell a stranger, right?
not usually.
That's not something you talk to somebody about you don't know. But that's what we forced people to. We forced people to find ways to get help when they don't really know how. And these are the things that we really should be thinking about. We should be thinking about these technologies this way. We're all afraid that they're going to come in and replace us, you know, all the bots and the robots and all that. So they're going to replace us. So that we can fret about that as much as we want to. But to help people live simpler lives is what we should be trying to do with the wonderful things that technology brings to us.
Thank you for listening to Eminent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at eminentteachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.